you know, there's $92 trillion, $93 trillion of total debt. And about 58 trillion of that is securitized, so it can be traded and can be sold relatively quickly. And so you can have selling of debt and the buying of real assets like foodstuffs and gold and silver and oil, etc. And in a matter of weeks, you can create extraordinarily high levels of price inflation. And that's what we're facing now.
Hey guys, Sean from SGT Report here. This is a deadly serious interview with my good friend David Jensen. They're shuffling chairs on the deck of the Titanic while the ship is going down. In the ship is the USS, United States of America. Now, Greg Reese just did a fantastic report about how the banks work and why they're collapsing. And David and I play some of that video and break it down for you here, as well as cover David's latest presentation about the implosion of banks around the world. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Noble Gold Investments have made it their mission to stay on top of the most important economic news. Now, there were three bank runs in the last month. These are the second and third largest bank runs in U.S. history. The government is claiming to be taking steps to guarantee all deposits, but the bottom line is this: more money printing. The Fed is sitting on unrealized losses of $1.2 trillion on their $8.3 trillion bond portfolio. And it looks like the Fed may continue to raise interest rates, even if that means tanking the economy. These are frightening times. But do you know who are the ones who are not afraid? The people that have invested in gold with Noble Gold Investments. Now remember, there's always a risk of investment, and there's no guarantee of any kind. So do your own due diligence. But I myself own precious metals. Gold is the most stable asset outside of any government control. And if you like silver, that's an option too. Thousands have approached Noble Gold Investments to get their hands on gold. Hurry and go to noblegoldinvestments.com to secure your wealth now. And if you qualify, you can bag a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with each gold or silver IRA. Just visit noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey friends, thanks so much for tuning in. Guys, it's just fantastic to have you back, and I'm so delighted to have back on the line David Jensen. He's going to help us break down what's happening to our banking system. Our system of money is completely corrupt, and while the Titanic is in the process of sinking, the band, represented by the mainstream media, plays on as though nothing is wrong. David Jensen, how are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you, Sean?
Well, I'm very good. Thanks. I want to let the audience know you and I were just watching Greg Reese's latest report titled How the Banks Work and Why They're Collapsing. We watched that whole thing together, and we're going to play a snippet of it here because Greg does such a fantastic job. The first part of that video is about usury and the evils of usury and how it had been banned really throughout human history, but it's back in force, and now it's bringing us all to our knees. Through usury, the system of usury, they've turned us all into serfs with their currency, which isn't money at all, is it, David?
No, it's not money. It is a debt-based unit of credit. And it's got no fundaments in the physical or the real world. It can be created without limit.
And the banks don't have the cash that we're told they have. The FDIC is not going to insure jack squat. We have Janet Yellen at the U.S. Treasury saying, well, maybe we'll back all deposits with our fiat bank machine, our little money printing machine. And we're talking about $17 trillion in deposits. I mean, it makes my mind spin.
It is revolting, right? When you think about it in terms of the fact that you have this unlimited credit-based cash that's been created, and now they don't even hold the credit-based cash to back up the accounts, and which means that they have to print more credit-based cash to support the failed system. So the math doesn't work, and we're in for a little bit of a rough ride on this re-entry to reality.
Now, guys, this is David's presentation we're looking at here, but let me click over here to How the Banks Work and Why They're Collapsing by Greg Reese. David did think it would be a good idea if we watched at least some of this together. And David, why don't you tell me to pause whenever you want me to pause to discuss, okay?
Sure.
Here we go. I'm playing this at 1.25 speed. Guys, as it pertains to my videos too, use this little toggle switch. I think it's available on Rumble as well. We're watching this on BitChute. Ramp the speed up to 1.5. You'll still understand everything quite perfectly. But here it is at 1.25 speed.
In the 17th century, the Bank of England began issuing paper fiat money. This gave the banks the ability to simply print money out of thin air. And for over a century, this was rightfully called out as fraud. until it became public policy, known now as fractional reserve banking. What was once seen as immoral is now seen as normal. Many assume that the financial loans given out by the banks are coming from savings they hold for their depositors, but this is not true. When someone takes out a loan, the bank creates new money out of thin air and then charges the person interest to borrow it. Fractional reserve banking allows the banks to legally create 10 times the amount of each deposit. This inflating of the circulating currency devalues that currency.
I'm going to pause it there. Does he have that right? I think it's worse than 10 times.
It's infinite. There are no fixed reserve requirements in terms of the amount that you can create. Yeah, so it's not 10 to 1. It's unlimited.
Yeah.
As long as you have demand for loans, the banks can create it out of thin air. And then it puts the cash or the cash account that it creates into the borrower's account, the sum that's in there, and then it creates a loan that it holds as an asset of the bank. Now it's beyond that in terms of the consequences, because the banks then take the cash that's in the account of the borrower and it lends it out in terms of betting in the market, buying bonds, speculating in all kinds of things. And this is where the incredible instability is augmented.
Yeah.
So, you know, the banks are holding plus or minus, you know, between 1% and 2% of the cash that's in the accounts, and the rest of it speculates with.
Now, isn't that amazing? Now, you and I know the history about how this whole charade began, and we'll play more of this video in a second. But I think Greg is right that it used to be 10 to 1 cash. They needed to keep at least 10% of the cash on deposit. Now it's less than 2%. But the way it used to be, right? The banksters knew, because they used to hold people's physical gold and they would give out gold and silver certificates. The gold and silver could be gotten back on demand by the person holding the certificate. But the banks quickly realized less than 10% of the people ever came back and wanted their bullion. So what they do, they destroyed the system. Now, not only do they not have silver and gold in the vaults, they don't even have cash in the vaults, David. I mean, people just forget this history, but that's the way it used to work when we had at least some form of honest money in this country, gold and silver, right? As the Constitution calls for.
Yep. Yep. It's just unmitigated greed. And it's been a hell of a ride since the 80s when the Fed started to blow bubbles and then address collapsing bubbles with bigger bubbles. And the only way it was possible was with the fiat debt currency system that we have. And then also they had to shut off the gold signal, the gold and silver signal of when the banks were printing, which they did in 1986 by giving control of the London gold market, the gold and silver market there, to the Bank of England, which is the central bank for the UK. So yeah, we're now at a terminus point at the end of this credit cycle.
And allows the banks an opportunity to profit dramatically. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 began a system of debt designed to inflate beyond its means until it implodes, the exact opposite of sound money. The banking cartel funded both sides of World War I, which led to the Great Depression, which led to the Emergency Banking Act of 1933, which ended the gold standard and made every dollar spent an IOU to further increase the debt, which is ultimately owed by the American people. The banking cartel funded both sides of World War II, which led to the Bretton Woods monetary system, which made the USD the world reserve currency, and gave central banks the option to go straight to the gold window of the US Treasury to exchange US dollars for physical gold. But by endlessly creating more debt, it became clear that the US had printed far beyond their gold reserves. And when several nations came to collect their gold, the federal government dishonorably closed the gold window.
Hey, let me just pause it there and get your thoughts on this. So when there was a run on the gold and then Nixon had to close it all down, David, have you ever given thought to who was getting the gold? It's the same banksters. It's the same banking cartel. It is the Rothschilds. It is the families that I think were stocking their vaults with our gold. It makes me wonder how much gold is even in Fort Knox at all at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Volcker, who is David Rockefeller's personal assistant, was the driving force behind what they call closing of the gold window. But it was really a gold default. And the problem they had in 1971 was that there was six times more currency issued than there was gold to back it. And after the Vietnam War, that what they called guns and butter, which was just basically unrelenting money printing. Foreign central banks, including France, came to New York and said, well, they would like to hand in their US dollars and take gold delivery. And it was getting so bad that in 1 week they lost 5% of the gold reserves that are held by the US and its three repositories. And at that point, it was pretty clear that they either had to reprice gold or to default on gold. If you reprice it, then you're giving away less gold than you are at the former price for the dollars that are being turned in. So they could have gone from a $45 an ounce price to, let's say, $100 an ounce and then reduce the bleeding somewhat. But the choice was made at this point to basically. Basically terminate the amount of gold that was backing the US dollar and go to a pure promissory note system. And the way they dealt with that was to create the petro currency, where the demand for the dollars and the need for the dollars was not based on its stability because it was backed by gold, but because it was used to pay for daily consumption of oil. So again, it's a plan that is a Ponzi scheme, and has led to this unlimited printing of this debt-based currency, which is now in recession.
I think it was Thomas Jefferson who warned us, if the American people ever turn over their system to a group of bankers, then eventually our sons and daughters will wake up homeless in the country their forefathers conquered. And here we sit. Now, you said six times more currency than gold to back it back in the early 70s, late 60s. How bad is it now? If there was six times more currency than gold, what are we talking about now? 100 times? 1,000 times? I mean, can we even measure it?
Well, if we round up the amount of currency that's in the system, looking at M2, it's about 22 trillion plus or minus. But if you round it up to 25 trillion, and then you look at the amount of gold that's held by the Treasury, that's supposed to be in round numbers about 250 million ounces. That means the value of that gold is about 1/50th of the amount of currency that's in circulation using a $2,000 an ounce gold price. So, yeah, there's about 1/50th, assuming that the gold is there to back it up, should they wish to go back to a gold-backed money system. So, you need to start adding zeros, several or at least a couple zeros to the price of gold to bring it back into balance again.
All right, we'll continue playing here, but stay tuned, guys. We're going to David's presentation here in a second.
To maintain world reserve currency status, the U.S. turned to its military, guns for hire to Saudi Arabia in return for the petrodollar, and war with any nation who threatens USD dominance.
By the way, let's talk about that. What they did to Libya, what they did to Gaddafi, it's just beyond the pale. And the witch cackled. We came. We saw he died. And you know what, Max Keiser, guys, say what you want about Bitcoin, but Max Keiser, Michael Saylor, all these guys say Bitcoin is peaceful money versus the dollar, which is a weapon of war. And it needs to be said, that is what we've turned into, a nation backed by a dollar, which has become a weapon of war.
A Ponzi scheme is an investment fraud that pays existing investors with funds collected from new investors. And that's what the bankers created. They profit exponentially off the people's debt. It was designed to collapse, and that's what it's doing now. All the markets are crashing, and the derivatives market alone is in the quadrillions, which is much more than the total financial assets of the entire world. There is nothing left to prop up the dollar. This Ponzi scheme is at its end. What that means is that the money you have in the banks will disappear. Everything will go to zero, and then we reset. How we do that will ultimately be up to the people. The banking cartel knows that the only way they can survive this collapse is to somehow convert everyone to an authoritarian CBDC. But without the people's trust, the banks will have problems with this. Many people will lose everything and will want nothing but justice from the old banking system. But many others will comply. Hard times are coming fast, and if we were smart, we'd prepare. Let the big banks die and create a banking system that serves we the people. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Well done, Greg Reese. All right, so we're going to go to the presentation here. Any comments on how we wrapped up that video there, David?
Well, yeah, it's the root of the problem is it's the currency system of which the banking system creates the currency. But the problem is not that you need a new banking system. The problem is that you need a new currency system. And so having a debt-based fiat currency is actually what leads to our demise and all these, you know, so even if you didn't have the banks, you know, playing games in the middle of this, ultimately, when you have a debt-based fiat currency and you create credit from nothing, you will always, always have collapse because what they try to do is create growth by creating credit. And what that does by definition is it creates consumption before you've increased the productive output of the economy. So what is needed with that is basically to be on this treadmill of creating more and more and more and more debt to sustain a level of GDP, which is created by the prior printing of money. So the problem, the root of our problem here is the debt-based fiat currency and the creation of credit from nothing. And so ultimately, I would extend that to the fact that you've got central planners running things either at the Federal Reserve or Treasury. But, you know, these all-knowing central planners, which we've seen throughout history, is that they create complete demolition wherever they go with time. And what we're hearing now is this credit-based debt currency system is in collapse. And the solution of the central planners for the collapse that they created is that, well, of course, you need more central planning. And there's a number of old jokes along that thought pattern of, you know, you need more of this. And that is not more of the prior destructive activity or policy is not what solves the problem for the future.
Well, that's right. And they want to roll out their FedNow system in July. Maybe you can comment on that. But beyond that, yeah, there is the promise, the threat, the very real world possibility of central bank digital currencies, which will be the ultimate slave serfdom plantation. Once you're on that system, it's game over. They will track and trace everything. Your currency will have a declining value over time, so you have to spend it. I mean, literally, they want to force people to spend, not save. That is the very definition of serfdom. There will be no more money. There will be no more wealth to hand down to our progeny. We will be perpetual slaves in a system like that, David.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it so much a digital currency system as it's a digital track and trace system. So it's meant to track and trace all of your activities and all of your expenditures. And then, of course, they're also going to give themselves the right to terminate the credits in the account over a period of time to ensure that you spend them as they deem fit. And by the way, they can also limit what you spend it on, saying, well, this is not a green expenditure, so we're going to prevent you from having that green expenditure. And, you know, it's just an extension of this central planning mayhem on a digital complete scale, and it won't work.
Where would you like to go as far as your presentation goes here? Because I think we've just established that the banks do not have adequate cash.
Let's start with the first slide, the one that you're there. We'll just go very quickly through this so that we don't belabor it too much. But this looks at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp's stats. By the way, the FDIC in net assets holds $70 billion. That's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. And there's $17 trillion of deposits. So how do you insure deposits with that kind of a balance sheet? But this looks at the U.S. banking system overall, $23.6 trillion of assets, $17.7 trillion of deposits in deposit accounts. And they're that 68.4 quarterly income. The banks are earning, in air quotes, per annum about $275 billion, which is the 4X times the $68.4 billion. So, yeah, and the point here is that people are under a misunderstanding that the banks use the savings of depositors to make loans, and they don't. They create them from nothing, as we've talked about earlier. Now, the next slide here is the problem with the Fed. The banks, the Fed has jolted the interest rate higher to 5% from 0%. It ran interest rates at 0% net more than a decade, and created a 0% rate debt rate economy that was completely dependent on these further and further loosening and basically free money to operate. So they had broken the economy, and that has now failed. And we've got now, with the spiking of the interest rates, we've got two problems. The first is the fact that the balance sheets of the banks has been impaired, although they don't recognize it, but the assets they hold have declined in value by $2 trillion. And so we've got a problem now is that the depositors, we can go to the next slide, but they're starting to pull their cash out of the banks. And this is exposing the fact that the banks hold as little cash as they do. Let's go to the next slide there, Sean. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so let's look at the strongest bank. You know, they talk about JP Morgan's fortress balance sheet. And typically we're told that the banks overall hold between 6 and 17% of their assets in cash and cash equivalents. And you can see there, I've highlighted JP Morgan there and showing they hold about 15.5% cash and cash equivalent as net assets. So let's go to the next slide and we'll see what they hold on their balance sheet.
Hey friends, just a quick break and a word about our sponsor. I think most of you know that de-dollarization has begun, but most of your friends, neighbors, and colleagues probably don't. The dollar's dominance is fading by the day. China, Brazil, India, Japan, even France have announced they're moving away from dollars as the major trade unit. The writing's on the wall, and these are scary times. But do you know who are the ones who are not afraid? The people that have invested in gold with Noble Gold Investments. Now remember, there's always a risk of investment, and there's no guarantee of any kind. So do your own due diligence. But I myself own precious metals. Gold is the most stable asset outside of any government control. And if you like silver, that's an option too. Thousands have approached Noble Gold Investments to get their hands on gold. Hurry and go to noblegoldinvestments.com to secure your wealth now. And if you qualify, you can bag a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with each gold or silver IRA. Just visit noblegoldinvestments.com. What is a cash equivalent?
Well, that's we'll see this on the next slide. So cash is notionally either physical cash in notes or deposits in their own accounts. But they say that the cash and cash equivalents, so where they show the $53 billion of cash and due from banks, it's 2.2% of their $2.3 trillion deposit accounts. But note here that they don't break out the component of cash and due from banks in terms of what is cash that they hold in their own accounts and what's owed to them, what's the liability to them from another bank, which may is going to be less stable than JP Morgan, if JP Morgan has the strongest balance sheet out there. So what their cash and cash equivalents is cash, cash due from other banks. And then there's about $500 billion that's, it says their Fed funds sold and securities purchased. There's about $500 billion that the Fed holds for them. Now, the problem is that $500 billion generates a meaningful amount of income for them, because as their assets are declining and the performance of their loans decline, the Fed is paying 5% interest on these accounts, and those accounts that the Fed holds, for which the Fed holds the cash, is the ultimately the source of that was QE, quantitative easing, where the Fed created money out of nothing, bought assets from the banks at grossly inflated values. And then the banks gave back a portion of that to the Fed to hold and give them income on it. And so there's about $500 billion that's generating every year about $25 billion of income for JP Morgan held at the Fed. And so if they have to pull those assets to give cash back to borrowers who are wanting to pull the money out, it's going to cause them and the other banks to grossly underperform in terms of expectations. So it's a really very much a circular Ponzi scheme there, Sean. And the bottom line is that the banks hold on average in vicinity of 1-1.5% cash for the accounts. Yeah, and here we can see the total amount that the Fed holds for the banks, $3.4 trillion, and it's giving them 5% interest a year on that. And they've also created this new bank term funding program through the Treasury that was announced a couple of weeks ago by Janet Yellen. But the problem with this loan facility is it lends out to the banks for 12 months only. Cash so that the banks can give cash back to the depositors who are pulling it out. By the way, this year there's been $500 billion pulled from the banking system, unprecedented. And the fact is that the banks can only borrow this for 12 months, and they it causes them to have an incredible expense compared to the cash that they were holding for the savers. We can look at the next slide, and I think that's the one that shows that. Yeah, so here we see in the upper right that bank term funding program, which is from the Treasury. It lends money to the banks. This is from on March 31, but the cost of borrowing was 4.85%. So that's what they have to pay to depositors if they pull their cash out. Now you can see from the second point there what three of the big banks are paying their depositors to hold their cash. They're 0.01% from Bank of America, 0.01%. From Chase, and the Wells Fargo's paying 0.15%. So if these cash accounts are being pulled from these banks, they're losing access to essentially free money. And then now, because of the imbalance in their balance sheet or their unbalanced sheets, they have to borrow at 5% to pay off these savers who are basically being paid zero. And that's going to have a real impact, an impairment on the bank's earnings here in the future as we go forward.
Let me just ask you a question, and I don't know if you have an answer, but for those who are wondering the same thing, we keep hearing about bank runs at smaller banks. People are moving their deposits to big banks because they fear that the small banks won't be guaranteed. Basically, Yellen said that, by the way. She basically said, the Treasury and the Fed will choose which banks we back. So the big ones, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Chase, Bank of America. What do you make of the folks that still have their money in smaller banks? And how about credit unions? My wife and I have a friend who is actually a president of a small credit union. I think they have two branches. And he once told us when we went out for a beer that they don't do fractional reserve lending. They only lend what they have on hand. They can't just create money out of thin air. And I wonder if that's true. But your thoughts on the move to big banks? I don't think these big banks are any safer, are they?
Well, notionally, the larger banks, there's what are called systemically important banks, and they're the ones that the Fed and Treasury are only supposed to step in to save. So I think that's why the movement is going to the bigger banks. Not only do they hold more cash, but the fact is that they basically hold a gun to the head of the Treasury and the Fed, and we're in trouble. And if you don't save us, we'll blow up the entire system. Right, it's like a suitcase bomber walking in somewhere and demanding something. So that's why people have moved to the bigger banks, because notionally they're in it. My view is they're in as much trouble as the small banks. But it's not just in terms of the cash they hold. The currency that they hold as an asset is at risk because of the amount of inflation of this currency and the collapsing, the onset of collapse of the debt that backs the currency that we're seeing now. And we can see that here in this slide, is that the banks have lost $2 trillion in terms of the value of what they hold. But there's another problem here, is that that's just from the 5% increase in rates. Now, the 5% increase in rates over the last 12 months that the Fed has executed is going to lead to bankruptcy and then ultimately insolvency, because the borrowers will not be able to pay back these loans. They're going to start to default on the loans. And we've only seen this to a small extent so far. But we do know there's an article in the Financial Times, or sorry, Financial Post, they're saying, and it was February 14th, saying one out of six Canadians is planning on defaulting on a major bank loan in the next 60 days. So 60 days is plus or minus the middle of April, and here we are. And so this is what we're seeing here in this chart, Sean, is that the fact is that the black line there is the bankruptcy filings by small business. And we can see now, if you go look back to just above the word all in blue there at the bottom in the legend, is the peak bankruptcy that occurred during the COVID panic in August of 2020. And you can see now that the black line is small business, and they're above the level of bankruptcy that occurred back in 2020. And the bottom line there is the publicly traded companies. So bigger companies, we can see that the default the bankruptcy on the publicly traded companies is starting to arc up as well. So you would expect that. You've got $93 trillion of debt in the system in the U.S., and the 5% increase in interest is going to add $4.5 trillion per annum, per year, of added interest costs into the $25 trillion U.S. economy. It cannot sustain it, possibly. And this is what now is going to lead to a vast upset in the economy, in the debt system. And because we have a debt-based currency system in the banks that issue the debt, but then also in the currency itself, as there's an ongoing increase in the collapse of the loans outstanding.
Is this a global apocalyptic event, or is this just going to bring the United States to its knees and then the BRICS are going to rise from the ashes as the new global power, and that'll be it for U.S. dominance in perpetuity? What do you think? How does this all end?
Well, the story's, it's being painted as primarily a U.S. problem, but it is a global problem. All the banking systems are the same. The currency systems are the same. And so, you know, until now, this hasn't been an issue, because I use the expression that the U.S. dollar has been the leper with the most fingers. But this, and it's not just an issue of the pet. We can see the petro currency now is dying and other things. And there's a lot of, you know, hype. You know, Macron today was coming back and publicly attacking the U.S. after his trip to China. He's a World Economic Forum stooge. But this is going to be portrayed as a petro currency collapse, you know, and a U.S. problem, a U.S. banking problem. But it is a global problem. And the cause, and this slide here, you can see the upper right-hand corner. You know, during 2020, the Fed increased the amount of money, M2, in the system by 27% year over year. And there's now been a total amount of increase in currency in the system of 38%. So call it 40% since the early 2020. So we're running an inflated Ponzi system economy. And what you can see in the lower right there is that the Ponzi is collapsing. They're desperately trying to contract the money supply to slow inflation down. But the amount of debt they put in the system here and the run up in interest rates is that they are working directly against the need for added currency to pay the added interest because of the inflation problem. And, you know, you've got 6%+ price inflation in the system. It's not going to go away. It's going to go back up again. And we have the problem here of an onset of hyperinflation as you know, there's $92 trillion, $93 trillion of total debt. And about $58 trillion of that is securitized, so it can be traded and can be sold relatively quickly. And so you can have selling of debt and the buying of real assets like foodstuffs and gold and silver and oil, et cetera. And in a matter of weeks, you can create extraordinarily high levels of price inflation. And that's what we're facing now. And the lower left just shows, you know, that this money printing, you know, the COVID infection fatality rate you see there in the box to the left, yeah, that. It's incredible when we look at what were the infection fatality rates and the fact that we locked everybody down, created this massive panic, told everybody they needed to have this experimental shot, and then created this amount of currency in a heartbeat, essentially, in the economy. And that's what's leading now to the price inflation we're seeing is the money printing over the last 2 years. And they are going to run out of control here and are in serious trouble. Yeah, final slide. Their solution, of course, from the crash that they've created is central bank digital currency. So the central planners have collapsed the economy. And now what we need to preserve us from more instability is more central planning, of course. But the real answer is decentralized money. So money has four characteristics: durable, divisible, portable, and intrinsic value. And only gold and silver have the intrinsic value component. Everything else is a fiction. And ultimately goes to zero over time because it's not money, it's currency. And so if you want assets that hold value, it has to have intrinsic value so that it can't be created from nothing.
Can I ask you something? Help me understand how a central bank digital currency could possibly save the system. I guess that's a new system. So explain to us what would happen if they got away with this plot. And that's what it is. It's a plot. These are bad guys and they're plotting to enslave humanity. I think this was all made to happen on purpose, as we just saw in that last slide, on the back of the COVID lie. So how does a central bank digital currency help reset the system? And I would like to say there should be a debt jubilee for everybody. If we're going to reset the system, let's reset the system with something gold-backed and, gold-backed and good for human beings. But that, of course, is not what these people want because they're anti-human. So just explain to me, because I don't get it, how does a CBDC save their crappy system? I mean, how would the world, how does this work globally? I don't see how they're going to get away with it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, all the major countries, there's going to be, I think, two types of CBDC. One is on the country level, and then one is on a global level for trade. They're going to blame the collapse on the banks, and we know the banks are holding, 1% plus or minus cash for all the deposits. They're going to say, well, the problem here was that people tried to pull their deposits out of the fractional reserve banking system. And so to prevent that, we want to give them digital currency so that they can't pull it out of the system. Because when you're holding a Federal Reserve note, even though it's inflating away, your money is private, number one. Your currency is privately held, number one. And number two, it's out of circulation in the system if you don't use it. So what they're going to say here is to prevent people from pulling their money out of the system, we're going to have to create a digital currency so that we can prevent, so it's always on deposit somewhere, right? If the money's in an account and you spend it, it just goes into an account somewhere else, so that the system doesn't collapse. And then number two is they can stepwise devalue the currency because no one's got any options when it's locked up in the system. So it's not really a solution. It's just trying to buy more time. But essentially what it is it's installing the total control system. There is no way out of a central bank digital currency system. You're under the everything's being fully tracked all the time and ultimately controlled because the central planner set the rule with the CBDC.
Okay, just a final question for you, just 5 more minutes, audience, if you can stick with us. Here's my question about solutions. In addition to honest money, silver and gold in physical form, we know that is a solution. And those that hold it today, I think, are going to be very pleased that they have it when this system does finally melt down. How about states' solutions? I think it was DeSantis who has introduced, maybe it was an executive order, banning central bank digital currencies in the state of Florida. That's one solution. The beautiful thing about our nation is that we do have 50 states, and the criminal federal government and the criminal Federal Reserve derives its power from the consent of the governed. So there's that. In addition to that, we see Bitcoin in El Salvador, El Salvador turning itself around with Bitcoin. So there are solutions here. Let's talk about what you see as being a solution.
Yeah, well, DeSantis, I mean, he's backed by Soros, right? So I would always look at things a little bit carefully. So you can ban a central bank digital currency, but what's your solution, right? Because you've got a bank run on and you've got a collapse of the debt, which is backing the currency system. You've got a collapse of the debt, which is going to be hitting harder and harder. That's collapsing the banks. So, okay, ban central bank digital currency, good start. What's your second step? And the only really sound and sustainable solution is decentralized money and returning to units of gold and silver as money because they have intrinsic value. And it also, and these guys hate this, it gives you privacy. So there's the problem with gold and silver as money throughout history has been that the central planners couldn't blow these bubbles and then create these obscene levels of speculation and profit by being in the financial system, right? Silver was first demonetized in I think it was 1880 or 1881. They made gold the unit of money exclusively because the gold was primarily held by the money-centered banks in New York, and they could create the bubbles and constrict the availability of money and collapse things. But they went a step further in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve. They wanted even more ability to profit and control things. But this is a, in the end, it's centuries old battle against sound money and distributed money in the hands of citizens. And I mean, you've seen the memes with Ron Paul sitting in a bleak landscape that's been fully destroyed and say, why wouldn't you listen to me? And that is so true, is that the solution of sound money, and only two things are money that we know of today, are gold and silver. And there's still 25 billion ounces of silver above ground in the hands of the citizenry. And when the price control in the digitally traded markets where they're trading promissory notes and not gold and silver, when that breaks down due to the actual physical shortage, you'll see zeros and more than one added to the price of silver. So just stand by here. But that's the ultimate long-term solution from the private sector, is distributed money, and to take the control out of the hands of the central planners.
Well, one more comment here regarding silver. First of all, the whole silver squeeze movement, and it's trending almost daily over on Twitter. Silver squeeze is trending. People are waking up to the idea that we have been under the control of these Babylonian, Khazarian, satanic bankers for a millennia, since the beginning of time. I think these are the same people that Jesus rebelled against and overturned their tables in the temple. So silver squeeze trending over on Twitter. I think that's very, very hopeful. I think that's I think that's a very, very good sign.
Yeah, it's what we would expect here as the fiat debt currency system collapses, is a move to sound money and to sound assets. And there's a very, very small list of it. I mean, if you want to look at assets that are nobody else's liability, when you've got a collapse of this highly indebted system, there's a very, very short list, including energy, gold and silver, food production resources, etc. But there's not a whole lot out there, Sean.
All righty. Well, guys, SD Bullion, that's who I used to buy physical precious metals. I'll leave a link below if I think to do it. Otherwise, click the banner at the top of SGT Report. And to read all of David Jensen's fantastic research, you can find him at Substack. That's jensendavid.substack.com. David, I always enjoy having you on the show. You're a kindred spirit. I really do appreciate you and your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sean. I really enjoyed our discussion.
Me too. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. As always, a special thank you to our subscribe stars, which are dwindling, but those that are there, we sure do appreciate you. Thanks for keeping us in the fight. And for real news every single day for free, guys, visit us directly at sgtreport.com, thephaser.com, and thelibertymill.com. Those are three antidotes to the corporate propaganda and all of those Mockingbird mainstream media lies. God bless you and yours. Bye-bye.
For purposes of the law of war, it sure looks to me as though our government has already been captured and our nation is already lost.